Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. In rural Iowa, a 700-acre certified organic farm dedicated to sustainable agriculture serves as a model for community-based food systems around the world. The operation is run by Ron Roseman, his wife, and their three sons. Mr. Roseman was the guest of the NUMAD Group for today's morning fill-up at the garage in Rapid City, where he talked about extreme weather conditions and the changing agricultural realities here in America. Morning Philip is sponsored by NUMAD Group with support from the Bush Foundation. And Ron Roseman joins us from the Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio in SDPB's downtown Rapid City studio. Ron, welcome to In the Moment. Thanks for being here.
No, thank you, Lori. It's my pleasure to be here.
Now, did you always want to take over your dad's operation when you were growing up, or when did you sort of become all in as a farmer?
Well, I went to Iowa State University starting in 1969 in farm operations, and then I wasn't so sure I wanted to be a farmer, so I went another route, ended up with a degree in biology and studied psychology and sociology. But then my last year of college, my dad's health was failing, and he said, why don't you come home and try farming for a year? Because I was kind of the last hope in the family of four boys to be a farmer. And I said, yes, I made the decision that I thought I could be happy there, and I made the decision to give it a try, and I never looked back. So that was in spring of 1973.
So in the 70s in agriculture in Iowa, things are looking pretty good, but that's not too ahead of the 80s and the farm crisis.
Exactly. Things were good in the 70s. And unfortunately, my father passed away in 1980. So I was kind of, we were on our own, and we had been married in 1978. And 1981, we had our first son, and we had three children. Three boys. And the farm crisis years came along, and in 1983, I was starting to study and listen and hear about farming without pesticides. And I thought, well, I could do this because I kind of grew up that way. See, we never gave up the hay and the pasture and the hogs and the cattle and the oats and we didn't give that up and just go to corn and soybeans like most farmers did. So I felt like I could do this quite easily. You know, it wasn't that easy. But then I had a lot of help.
Was it a radical idea at the time? You know, what were other people saying about farming without pesticides at that time?
There was a growing number of people questioning, especially water quality and pesticides and fertilizers in our water. Yeah. In our water, was becoming a huge issue. And so there was a group of farmers that approached Iowa State Extension and said, how come you're not doing more about teaching farmers how to farm with less fertilizer and less pesticides and still be profitable and not sacrifice yields? And they listened to us. So we started this group called the Practical Farmers of Iowa, which today has 3,500 members in the state of Iowa, all with the idea, and we appeal to all kinds of farmers, conventional, big, little, small, organic, non-organic, et cetera, all learning how to be more sustainable and how to deal with this emerging huge issue of changing climate.
Let's talk about that, because how does, when there's so much news about climate change and policy ways to address it and research and, a new report this year, how do you look at the topic of climate change as it relates to you and your operation?
I think agriculture is being left out of the equation. And first of all, it can account for, the estimates are all over the board, between 9% and 20% of CO2 emissions come from agriculture, but some say that's not high enough when you consider pesticides and fertilizers and et cetera, everything that goes into it. But what isn't being talked about at all, hardly, is that farmers hold the key in if we have a good soil quality, if we maintain the beneficial microorganisms in the soil that's if we have organic matter, if we don't have soil erosion, if we keep the ground covered as much as possible, if we have diversity, you know, we have to have grass, we have to have trees, we have to have something living. And, you know, unfortunately, we have gotten too much of the attitude that all we want out there is the crop and nothing else. Well, you know, pesticides are not selective. They kill the good, the bad, and the ugly. So they kill the good species of microbes and insects and so forth. And, you know, it's all very disturbing because we rely on all of life to maintain life. And so we have a very fragile environment. You know, we have this fragile layer of soil that we've lost half of, and our organic matter is being depleted, and that's what stores carbon. And the same with our atmosphere. You know, we've increased the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, and that warms the atmosphere and warms the oceans, and higher temperatures, warmer air can hold more water. So that's why we are seeing all these extreme weather events with more rainfall, et cetera.
As we look at just, you know, the global situation with, you know, the reduction in famine, for example, then the argument is that, you know, this food that we're creating here in this part of the world is feeding the world and saving lives, but it has to be done in a way that is sustainable. How do you sort of look at this this notion of how to feed the growing population of the world in a responsible and in a way that can continue?
Well, I think we need to look at that differently. We need to recognize that other countries have the responsibility and respect them enough to say that they can learn how to feed their own people. I think we're a little bit wrong there where we think we have to feed everybody. We don't recognize food sovereignty of many developing countries, and I can say that because I've done some work in Central America, and our youngest son worked there for 2.5 years in Honduras, and he works for the Foreign Agricultural Service. And food sovereignty means that you respect the right of any country to grow the majority of their own food in their own country. And yes, we can help educate farmers how to do that in a sustainable way, but emphasis on exports, I think, is wrong-headed. You know, it's not the total answer.
So let's talk about domestic markets and the sort of disconnect between, you know, what's happening in an American city that, you know, they might not even know where their food is coming from. How do we make those connections between the farmers and the markets, you know, that are really pretty close by?
Mm-hmm. Well, in our case, we have developed over the years, we've developed our own label for beef and pork and popcorn, which my wife runs that business. We have a store on our farm, and one of our sons and his wife started a local foods restaurant in our town of 5,000, and our daughter-in-law also runs what is called farm table delivery service, where she picks up produce grown by growers all over Western Iowa and buys them and then resells them and distributes them to grocery stores, restaurants, cafeterias, and so forth. And that is a model that I think holds a lot of promise in terms of having regional food hubs out of, let's say, places like Sioux Falls or Rapid City, where they are considered the hub. And then they support farmers all around them, and that number of farmers could increase dramatically as time goes on. The food stays closer to home, uses less energy. You know, you combat climate change that way. People will know what's in their food because they know the producers, and you can help this increasing divide between urban and rural that we see out there in our political atmosphere. And what I mean by that is, I think urban areas have a responsibility to keep rural areas going around them. You know, we're not islands. We shouldn't be separate islands. We should be recognize that our earth and its resources needs to be utilized in the most sustainable way possible, and efficient, and economics as well. You know, it's got to be profitable. But we can feed people this way, because currently, you know, we waste about 50% of the food that is grown in this world, either through storage problems or through food waste at the restaurants or at the grocery stores or at the dinner table, you know, about 50%. So we can feed the people. We already have enough food. We're just, it's a problem of distribution and so forth.
When we look at the farm-to-table movement, there are times when it is criticized for being, you know, it can be an elitist or a more expensive option. Do you think it has to be?
No. I think that's where we need a whole new economic paradigm in terms of what are the actual costs of production of this so-called cheap food economy. It's not accurate, because it's not as nutrient dense. There's a lot of data coming along from about the health aspects of processed foods, of the cheap food that, you know, if it's got a lot of pesticide residues, if it's got antibiotic residues, et cetera, there's costs to this cheap food economy that are not factored in terms of water quality, soil health, again, the soil quality, nutrient density of the food. It's not as dense as it once was grown in those kinds of situations. Until we factor in the true cost of production in terms of the energy being used to transport food thousands of miles, et cetera, and that it has to be perfectly blemish-free and all this stuff, it's not the real. It should not be for the elite. It's a problem of a lot of, like most large corporations, like their products to come from one source or as few sources as possible, to be as uniform as possible. But that leaves people and small companies, small farmers, and small entities of all kinds out of the picture. But there are models out there that are working. Take Organic Valley, for example, the nation's largest farmer network of dairy farms in the country, of about around 2,000 dairy farms. They've worked out the distribution and the marketing from, you know, a diverse nationwide group, and it's working for them. So you know, we can make this work. It's just that we have to look for ways to do that.
Yeah. For people, for consumers who are on this end, who, you know, are not necessarily in the ag industry, but are that want to start asking questions about where their food is coming from and making some of those choices, what's your advice for some of those questions to ask?
Well, one is people need to learn how to cook.
Yeah.
You know, the cost of organic produce is not much higher to begin with, fresh vegetables, et cetera. It's just that people don't need to learn how to prepare that food, and it's not going to be higher priced than that processed, quotes, cheap food that's, you know, cheaper for the masses of people. Not if you buy the original product and prepare it yourself. So it's all about definitions too. And what, you know, there's only so much convenience. our country is really guilty of, you know, consumption of products that don't last, and we have to change that. We are the biggest culprit in the world as far as nations for consumption of products and the reuse of finite resources. You know, that can't go on forever because our resources, whatever they are not infinite.
Let's talk a little bit about generations because, you know, you're a multi-generational operation. And when we talk about things like knowing how to cook, knowing how to can, knowing what a real strawberry or, you know, tomato even tastes like, depending on how old you are, talk a little bit about your family and the intergenerational. You know, what does it mean to sort of be doing this in a family context?
It means everything because the fact that two of our sons came back to farming after one was in another career in Minneapolis, and the second son started farming right out of college. The third son's in the Foreign Ag Service, but now we have four grandchildren, and that they will have an opportunity to learn some of these skills that our three boys did that helped them to decide that they wanted to, you know, stay involved in agriculture. We never forced them to. In fact, we were surprised that they chose, all three of them chose agricultural studies at Iowa State University. They could have done whatever they wanted to, you know. Mm. But the fact that they, I mean, that says everything that, you know, family, generational, I just say in general, we need to find ways to have more farmers, not less, around the world, because it's a how better than to share in God's beauty and God's creation than to be stewards of the earth. And that's, I think young people get that a little bit more than maybe some of our older generations.
Ron Roseman was the guest at today's Morning Philip at the Garage in Rapid City that is sponsored by the NewMed Group with support from the Bush Foundation. Roseman Family Farms is a 700-acre certified organic farm dedicated to sustainable agriculture in rural Iowa, and he is one of the founders of Practical Farmers of Iowa. Ron, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me.